Hello and welcome to The Green Room. Come on in. I'm John Tibbetts, your host for these Friday evening programs here on KXTR, in which we go backstage, take a peek at the arts in and around our town. Well, the subject of fantasy fiction has always been very close to my heart, and I'm pleased to announce tonight that it's my pleasure to interview Mr. Jack Williamson, a grand master of fantasy, one of the greatest of all fantasy writers in this century and maybe even ever. We're going to find out about his long and illustrious career. If you promise to hang on after these words, we'll be right back. Part 2. 3, 2, 1. While I'm here at the O'Hare Marriott in Chicago on the occasion of a World Fantasy Convention, and I've had the good fortune to track down and talk to Mr. Jack Williamson. Jack, I described you earlier as a fantasy writer, but actually science fiction and fantasy both, although somehow they always seem so well blended. I can't quite distinguish that well between the two.
I think the distinction exists in the mind of the reader, the writer, and not objectively. I've always felt that science fiction is based on things that we feel could be true or come true sometime, somehow, in some world. And in fantasy, we don't care. We're interested in the characters, the story, the drama, the color, and we don't care if it is some sort of dreamland.
You have had a very long career. You have seen many fads and fancies come and go. You made your start, let's get a kind of an overall profile here. You made your start with what, around the time of the pulps with Amazing?
Amazing Stories, 1928, which is getting to be a long, long time ago.
And then relatively recently you wrote a sequel to, was it The Legion of Space?
Yes, the one called The Queen of the Legion was published this year.
So 1928 to 1983. That kind of staying power is unusual, isn't it?
Well, it's nice to be still in the game.
As times have changed, as you have seen writers come and go and stories come and go, to what do you account your enduring popularity? Are you able to tell a whacking good story? Is the imaginative aspect of your work the strongest? What is the secret here?
Well, I'm not sure I'm doing all that well, but I keep trying, and I think more than anything else is that I take science fiction seriously. I believe in it as a way of thinking about science and progress and change and what the future will be. And people have asked sometimes why I didn't write something else, but I have a frame of mind, a frame of reference that fits this sort of thing, and whatever I want to write seems to fall into it pretty naturally.
Let's go back to the time of the pulps, because that was at a time certainly when science fiction did not have a critical or, let's say, a legitimate reputation maybe behind it. Although, curiously enough, many of the great writers of the 19th century, in one way or another, dealt with what we would now call science fiction.
In the 19th century, science fiction wasn't yet in the ghetto, and such people as H.G. Wells could publish science fiction stories that are still great, that were part of the literary mainstream. And somehow, early in this century, in America, science fiction was mostly published in the pulp magazines, which were aimed at not very literate, not very well-heeled, almost adolescent male audience. Mm-hmm. And that shaped it pretty much. This was not true so much in Europe, and I believe that overseas science fiction has always been more respectable than it has been here for a long time. I was in Yugoslavia a couple of years ago, and I was impressed that the fans I met were mostly serious professional people, and they regarded science fiction as a legitimate area for the discussion of serious social issues in a way that it has been to some people here, but not very many people.
Many writers who have survived that age of the late 20s into the 30s in the pulps talk more about survival, I suppose, than social issues. It was a hard way to make a buck at that time, wasn't it?
It was. You were doing pretty well to get a penny a word for what you wrote. Of course, a penny a word was probably equal to a dime a word now, which it was worth working for, but it's also hard work.
And at that time, what were the ideal publications that you had to crack to know that you had made it as a writer?
Well, through most of these years, why Astounding Stories, which finally became Analog, was the top magazine. And if you were writing fantasy, why Weird Tales was the leader for many years. Unknown for a few years, flourished and died with a different sort of science fiction. And Argosy, th- through at least the earlier years, was publishing the most popular writers and paying them somewhat better. People like A. Merritt and Edgar Rice Burroughs were getting a nickel a word or more.
You mentioned those two writers. I wanted to ask you if they were two of the folks who maybe influenced you the most at this time.
I think certainly they were. I read some of Burroughs, and I still admire him as an excellent story craftsman. And Merritt was writing a sort of colorful, half-poetic fantasy that infatuated me completely. And my first published works were pretty Merritt-esque.
For example, what are some of the titles you're thinking of?
Well, The Moon Pool was Merritt's thing that influenced me most, and such stories of my own. Well, my first story called The Metal Man was in many ways sort of parallel to a story of Merritt's called The People of the Pit, in an adventure in a volcanic crater with strange creatures, capture and escape. The basic situation is the same, though we had different locale, different creatures, and so forth.
Now, these are wonderful models, and yet at some time, I suppose, you realize that I cannot continue to be imitative of them. I've got to, you know, you cannot let that become a sort of a chain around you either.
No. Well, at the same time, or about the time I started writing, I discovered H.G. Wells' short stories, and they, I felt, were, well, more sophisticated, probably more intelligent, more realistic. They depended more on ideas and less on a sort of poetic style and fantastic imagination, and I gradually got farther and farther away from Merritt. I worked on several stories in collaboration with a doctor named Miles J. Brewer, who was doing good work at the time, and he emphasized the values of character, believability, and put less emphasis on wild imagination.
Origins have been so important to many of the famous fantasy and science fiction writers of our century, and I'm thinking about the New England group and the Chicago group and out in San Francisco. Where is your center of activity as a youth at this point?
Well, it was the pulp magazines, pretty much.
Would that have meant New York then?
Well, except that I didn't spend much time in New York. I grew up on a farm in eastern New Mexico, and most of the material I came may have been printed in New York or Chicago, but it arrived by U.S. mail, and I...
Were you always able to write then, using the Southwest as your center of activity?
Well, I've nearly always lived there, and I don't feel it's any great handicap. Mm-hmm. I've spent a little time in various other places with rewards, but I've always felt that New Mexico was my home, and it still is.
We have to, of course, touch on some of your works that justly now are considered classics. I was talking with my father, and The Humanoids is something that you will often hear devoted readers of this subject refer to as one of the great greats, and certainly it's a book that made a great impression on me. Is this one of the books that most of your fans and readers will want to talk to you about?
I suppose so. It's certainly been the most often translated and reprinted work of mine. It's The Humanoids itself is a sequel to a novelette called With Folded Hands that I feel said the same thing more effectively. John Campbell, the editor of the magazine, wanted a sequel, and I wrote a sequel, which for various reasons has a sort of ambiguous ending, but the ambiguity is not really bad, I think.
The book preceded a whole decade of science fiction films in which we saw creatures from space, usually metallic beings, devoid of feelings, devoid of emotions and human concerns. And it's almost as if maybe you had it been an influence upon the filmmakers to come.
I don't know. I would like to have had the story made into a film, and it was been optioned a couple of times, but has never got to the silver screen.
That concern with an oncoming mechanization of man, is that something that you have lived long enough to see come to fruition? How do you feel about the state of things now, in hindsight of, say, 1948?
Well, it's... The mechanization is part of it, And it seems to me also that the humanoids are a sort of metaphor for society. And as our society becomes mechanized and driven by technology, where society itself comes to limit the freedom of the individual more and more. So it's in by way of metaphor, at least, where the story is about what I think is happening.
Well, I don't mean to sound pretentious, but I'm wondering if it's fair to say that the science fiction writer sometimes can be a kind of a watchdog for oncoming technologies and how they might or might not affect us.
It seems to me that I've said and thought the same sort of thing, that at least science fiction is a way in which we can discuss and feel the impact of technological change, technological revolution.
At the same time, your ability to tell a rattling good yarn, we cannot dismiss that, because to tell a good story has to be one of the most difficult things in the world.
Well, that certainly sounds good. And I like a good story, and I've always felt that no matter what you say in a book or a story, why, it's wasted unless people read it. So I have worked hard to make material readable, to capture the reader and hold the reader.
I'm thinking of things now like Legion of Space and Legion of Time and Darker Than You Think, in which the story is so strong, you know, that you just get caught up in it. And when you're working on books like these, do you often tell your stories to people? Do you follow the function of a traditional storyteller, or is it always coming out of your fingers onto paper?
I think it comes out of the fingers on paper. If there's a hazard in telling a story, because if you tell it, it's expressed and you don't have to write it. So I think most writers are pretty cautious about presenting their material orally. Because when we were writing for the pulps, it has always seemed to me that was ephemeral. The pulp paper was not long-lasting, and in those days, material was not reprinted. So it has struck me that writing for the pulps was very much like the Homeric barge chanting their narratives. It was a matter of the moment.
Looking back now over your many books, could you select a few that you think have told stories that you thought were the most solid, have stood up the best over the years?
I think Darker Than You Think is the one that most fans remember most warmly, and it's certainly a favorite of my own. And the Legion of Space series has been very popular. I happen by accident to have a good central character for that, Giles Abibula, a drunken bum that is more or less drawn after Shakespeare's Sir John Falstaff.
I was going to ask you about Giles Abibula. What is it about this character that has so engaged so many readers over the generations?
Well, in the Roman comedies of Plautus and Terence, there was a drunken soldier they called the Miles Glorioso, and Shakespeare borrowed this stereotype, I guess you'd call him, and gave him a wonderful new life. And I tried to borrow from Shakespeare, and it represents, well, human instincts and weaknesses in a pretty vivid way. And I don't know how to describe it, but there's something that's still wonderful to me about it. I don't claim any credit for creation, though.
Well, when you can place characters like that in such bizarre and complex surroundings, they remind us the human element is the most important after all, I suppose.
I think so.
All writers have had favorite children that maybe went wrong, a book or an idea that just never quite came to fruition, or at least in the way that you would have wished. Anything you'd like to share with us in that regard?
Well, only that this is a painful and disastrous thing, and a good many of my projects over the years have gone off the track, and often for reasons that I wasn't able to diagnose. I've done a good bit of collaboration, most of it with Fred Pohl, but one novel with Jim Gunn, and many of these things started from projects that I'd undertaken and was unable to finish on my own. And
the very fact that they might develop in unexpected ways, sometimes disastrous ways, though, is part of the challenge, the continuing challenge of any writer.
I think so.
Nonetheless, life must be tough sometime when you have to face that day to day.
Yes, especially when you're trying to make a living on a penny a word or less. Why, I always found that what I actually published was written in probably less than half of my working days, and I wasted a lot of time on material that didn't work out well, that either I couldn't finish or that was rejected.
Why don't we catch that phone?
Problem thinking of titles.
We're resuming with Jack Williamson. We are spontaneous, folks. We just answered the telephone. Back again with Jack Williamson. We're talking about fantasy and science fiction, a career that has gone from 1928 up to the present, a book published this year. And again, that title is?
The Queen of the Legion, I guess the last one, the collaboration with Fred Pohl called Wall Around the Star, came out about the same time.
Yeah, who are the two publishers here?
Well, Pocket Books did Queen of the Legion, and Del Rey did Wall Around the Star.
Okay. Jack, an interesting question just occurred to me. We were talking about those problem children that every writer knows about. How about something that you had published in one of the pulps, at least in magazines form, but never has been put into hard covers? Anything that you would like to have seen come forth like that?
Well, I have one paperback novel, Bright New Universe, that was just in a nice paperback, and I'd sort of like to see that in hard covers, though it's not a perfect work.
What has been the toughest thing for you over the years as a science fiction writer, either personally or professionally? A lot of times you'll hear science fiction writers somehow apologizing as if they're not doing a legitimate endeavor. Is that a part of it? I mean, what is the toughest part?
I'm not sure what the toughest part is. I've always enjoyed writing, and I'm happy to have kept in it, and sometimes it's been tough to make a living at it. There was a period in the beginning about 1950 when I had a feeling that a lot of new writers were coming in who were smarter and better educated and so forth than I was, and I felt a little bit out of the game, or sometimes more than a little bit. I did a comic strip for the New York Sunday News for 3 years, which sort of distracted me from other writing. And when that was done, I got some college degrees and became an English professor for about 20 years.
It's interesting you'd bring that up, because I did want to inquire if your own teaching has also kept sharp your writing skills as well.
Well, I believe that the opportunity to read and talk about a lot of the world's best literature can't have hurt my writing skill. It's hard to point to any specifics, but I enjoyed studying literature. I enjoyed teaching it. I managed to keep writing when I could during vacations and holidays, and I was delighted after I retired to find that I can still write and people will still publish them.
And of course, your own works are now the subject of many a classroom curriculum around the country in high schools and universities. And I'm curious what you would be hoping, at least, that the instructor would be saying about your work.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't want to dictate to him.
Well, this is your chance to go ahead and just do a little wish fulfillment or speculation here. How would you hope maybe you would be judged eventually? We could put it that way.
Well, I'm not really prepared to say that. I am delighted to be remembered. I have taken my writing seriously, and more seriously, I suppose, or at least my purposes in writing have probably become a little more serious and a little more complex, but I've generally written things that I believed in, things that were interesting to me, and I felt that there is something about science fiction that makes it special in what I mentioned before. It enables us, or gives us a way of talking about technology and what it's going to do to us. The science, I've always said, gives us the hard facts, but fiction gives us a way of feeling about them that the scientific approach doesn't. So it's a way of human feeling about change and progress and technological revolution.
Jack Williamson, in conclusion, is it possible also to think for a moment and maybe share with us what's the best science fiction idea, story, or book you ever saw?
it's hard to say. I'm still very fond of H.G. Wells, who I feel is the principal creator of science fiction as we know it, and has done many stories that I still admire tremendously. But to pick the time machine over the Island of Dr. Moreau would be pretty difficult.
And how about projects for the future? Anything special on the drawing board?
Well, I've finished an autobiography called Wonder's Child that should be published next May by Blue Jay Books, and I'm working on a novel called Life Burst for Del Rey that will hopefully come out a year from now, say.
Would you call yourself a mainstream writer at this point?
Well, I've always been happy to be a science fiction writer. I think that the division between mainstream and science fiction is sort of tending to melt away.
And, of course, the paperback revolution has aided in that, I believe, too.
I think so.
Do you think the paperbacks could be compared to the pulps of yesterday?
They've certainly replaced the pulps, that is, the paperbacks, comic books and TV between them have done what the pulps used to be.
And yet, if Amazing or Weird Tales could come back, would you hooray the day?
Well, I suppose so, though they can't come back as they were. You can't set the clock back.
We're going to have to wait another, at least a half century, I suppose, for the writers of today to look back to know what their generations and roots had been that were so important. Jack Williamson, one of the grand masters of fantasy and science fiction, a career spanning 1928 to the present. Happily, you're still growing strong, and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me here in the Green Room.
Thanks for inviting me.
All right. Thank you so much, Jack.